Hello and welcome to a very special Tarlhurst End podcast with your host Mark Mayo, and joining me this week for a very special interview is Simon Cox, the former Reading striker who came through the Royals Academy as a hometown boy and went off after not quite making it into the 05-06 Coppell record-breaking team, went off to the likes of Swindon, West Brom and Nottingham Forest, found himself back at the club under managers such as Nigel Adkins, Steve Clarke and Brian McDermott. A very interesting time to be at the club. Not quite so successful, but plenty, of course, on all of those topics to discuss. And let's jump into that now, then, our Tarlhurst End interview with Simon Cox.
Back the boys and make some noise for the Tarlhurst End podcast. Come on, you arse!
Welcome to the Tarlhurst End from a busy central London pub. I suppose every central London pub is busy at this time of year, but that is not important, because as long as you can hear us loud and clear, you're joined by your host Mark Mayo, and on the other end of the table to me is someone from Tarlhurst. We're in the Tarlhurst End as well, and that is Simon Cox. How's it going, mate?
Yeah, I'm good, thank you. How are you?
I'm all good, and it's an interesting chat with you, as someone who, a rare breed of player who's signed for the club twice, come through both the academy and then rejoined a little bit later on. And let's talk about that second spell to begin with, because that was probably the one with the most sort of, a lot went on really, wasn't it? It's a very interesting time for the club. You returned under Nigel Adkins, and I kind of want to get a flavour of what Nigel Adkins as a manager for the fans was all positive, and, you know, getting across the message and very ambitious. What was he sort of like as a player?
Exactly that, really. When I first met Nigel, which was at the Medeski, sat down with him, and he basically sort of went through my career before moving back to Reading, and told me exactly what he wanted from me. Told me that, you know, everything was going to be to the letter, which was great. And yeah, it was an interesting time, as you say. What I think he didn't say was where the football club was at that stage. Which, in all fairness, I mean, we still had people like Sean Morrison at the football club, Alex McCarthy at the football club, and then as that summer window went on, they seemed to, well, the football club, I think, were in a position where they had to sell players. So Sean went to
Cardiff
or Huddersfield, I think.
Yeah,
or did he sign from Huddersfield? And then Alex went to, well, he had about four or five clubs looking at him at the time. It was that stage where, coming in was great for me, because it was my home, it was where I wanted to be, but probably wasn't told exactly the position that the football club were in at the time.
Yeah, well, I imagine there are probably a lot of people unaware of the position at the football club, and there were things, tax bills and all sorts of stuff going on, but you came in, as did Glenn Murray, that summer, and he was on loan, I think, only for 6 months.
Yeah.
And in that 6 months, you and him struck up probably one of the best strike partnerships I've actually seen at the club. What would you say was actually, you know, why did that work so well with you two as a combo?
Glenn is one of those players you could tell had unbelievable amount of quality. He was somebody that you could, you know, get the ball into, and he would hold on to it, and he'd bring others into play. And for my game, it was great, because I liked to drop deep, so I could turn and, you know, play 1-2s off of Glenn. And it worked. It was great. Loved playing alongside him. We started to see, I think he ended up on 7 or 8 goals. And
he left in January, and I think he was still our top scorer.
Yeah,
I think
that's it. So I think I ended January on 9. And obviously that was in the midst of the change of manager at the same time. So I think his last game was Norwich at home, I think, Glenn's.
I remember Brighton away being one of them, but I can't remember
that.
The one after that was last.
Yeah, I think his last game was Norwich at home, which was around sort of the New Year marker.
Yeah.
And again, like I say, it was when Steve Clark had just come in, and I was kind of begging to Steve Clark, do whatever you can, you have to keep him, like, we've got this good thing going, you know, if you want this good thing to continue, you have to keep him, whether that's another 6 months or try and sign him. I think they tried to put an offer on the table for him to sign, but Glenn's a Premier League striker, and he went back to Palace at the time
and went straight into the team.
And I remember he played one of the games on telly against Man City, and you know, gave company a hard time because he probably hadn't played against somebody like Glenn before. So it was just a really good partnership that we struck up.
Yeah, and it's a shame almost that Nigel Atkins went during that. What was your sort of feeling as Nigel went? Did you kind of think that his time had kind of gone at the club? Was he not really inspiring the players? What was kind
of... I mean, I've never felt from any manager that leaves whenever I've been a player under them, I've never ever felt that they've lost the dressing room, as the sort of phrase goes.
Yeah.
I think Nigel, the most positive man I think I've ever met, sort of just started to lose a little bit of sight from that positivity, and then nothing really changed, in all honesty. You know, he still took training was still a good standard. Maybe the belief, and you've got to remember, the players that we had in the squad at the time had never been in this situation before.
Yeah.
So you kind of have to take that into account as well. And Nigel's probably used to having 25 senior players, or with a few young lads in there, and having to call upon an additional one or two from loan and get through. Whereas he didn't have that at Reading. It was, you've got to deal with whatever's in the academy and whoever you brought in, you know, in the summer. There was no real chance to go out and get more people like Glenn. And I think that just took its toll on him, really.
Yeah, because I think it might be his last game. It was the 6-1 defeat at Birmingham, or one of the last games. And that was one of those that I wasn't there, and I wasn't listening to it live, but it's one of those where when someone told me the result, I was like, no, you're joking. Tell me the real result now.
Do you know what, actually? And this is going to sound really bad, but in that game, we actually did okay, or we started well.
We got it back to 2-1, didn't we? And I think at that point it was like, no, don't worry about the two goals.
That's it. It was at the time where they scored like one straight away, then two, and you thought, no, or whatever, or however the scoring went.
Yeah.
And you scored at like vital times, and we were sort of still in the game, and we were... Nigel liked to play the passing game, and we actually were knocking the ball back quite nicely.
Yeah.
Just weren't getting the break in the other end, and then, you know, go down the other end, and things were happening. And,
what's it kind of like as a striker in that situation? Because you've been given a task before the game, obviously, to score goals, to support the attack, but if the defence is struggling that much, are you inclined to just kind of forget that, or take it into your own hands? Or?
Well, you kind of feel that, you know, if things are going badly at one end, you kind of have to help out, so you get further away from the goal that you need to score in.
Yeah.
But then, ultimately, the only way you get out of that is by scoring goals. So you kind of have to play a little bit of cat and mouse, where do you sort of neglect a little bit on your defensive side to then go and put the ball in the net at the other end, which takes a lot of pressure off of your defenders and your goalkeeper. So, you know, it is a fine balance.
Yeah, then obviously Nigel went and Steve Clark came in. At the time, Steve Clark felt to me like a good appointment, someone who I think he lived locally, so he kind of had a eye on the club, Ascot kind of way, I think. Has obviously managed in the Premier League, seemed like he'd done a good job at West Brom, maybe a little bit hard done by to leave there. Came in at Reading, and I felt like that was a good appointment. What were your sort of first thoughts as he came in?
Well, obviously, knowing what had happened before when he came in at West Brom, and obviously I had to leave then. But when he was appointed at Reading, I thought, good fit. somebody who, very good coach, brings in Kevin Keane with him. Stephen Reeve obviously came in a little bit later. But yeah, good coach, good coaching team. I thought, yeah, this is a good appointment for the football club. And something that actually struck me with it was a little bit of ambition.
Yeah.
He was the guy that was going to turn Reading into the, you know, the football club that it once was, moving forward, you know, progressive style of play. And I thought it would have been a good appointment.
Yeah, and then yourself, you kind of drifted in and out of the team to begin with. How was this kind of, you know, or was this explained to you? Did you kind of get a sense as to what he was trying to achieve with the team?
Well, like I said before, when he first came in, obviously I had a relationship previous with him at West Brom where it kind of never really started at West Brom. I came back from the Euros and in 2012, and he was the first person I saw when I walked back through the door at the training ground, and he said, look, there's four people in front of you, you're probably not going to play. I'm bringing in Lukaku from Chelsea.
Oh yeah, yeah.
You know, you're not going to play, so it's probably best you go and find yourself a new club. And I absolutely accepted the honesty.
Yeah.
The honesty, fantastic. Like, I was like, yeah, that's exactly what I was looking for. Not happy about it, but I'd rather you say that to me and I could go and find myself a new club than you keep me here and put me in the youth team. So I understood that honesty. So when Steve came through the door already, I felt like I needed to go and see him and just say, look, obviously what happened at West Brom is a little bit of a different circumstance here. You're not going to go and get Lukaku in at Reading, so I've probably got more of a chance to play. And he was like, look, that was back then. That was the situation. This is different. So I was like, yeah, fine, brilliant. Then, as I say, I was sort of begging him to get a deal for Glenn Murray done, either that's a loan or a signing, so we could continue. And then I played, I think, Norwich at home, which was, I think, Glenn's last one and one of Steve's first ones, and scored, I think we won 2-1 or drew 2-2. And then that was really the beginning of the end for me. Without any conversation, it basically turned that I was going to be surplus to requirements, and then throughout the rest of that campaign, the next 5 months of the season, I played three or four times, I think.
Yeah, because I remember we had Jamie Mackie and Paul Gretniak, he kind of pictures his spot too, and we had an FA Cup run that year.
Yeah.
And you were kind of on the bench and sort of in and out, not getting on the pitch too often. Was that basically a case of, did you feel like you were the first reserve, you were just kind of waiting for those guys to sort of be dropped out of the team, or?
Well, I mean, when you look at, it was weird because I felt that I did okay leading up to Christmas. Eight, nine goals or so, and then wanted that momentum to continue. Then he took me out of the team and put Jamie Mackie up front with Pau, basically I wasn't used. I had a really good relationship of getting the ball from Ollie Norwood.
Yeah.
And you had Gareth McCleary one side, Nick Batman the other. It was a progressive sort of thinking team. And then I think my last appearance was the FA Cup semi-final. That was it really. I thought I had an injury sort of niggling away at me at that time, and as soon as that FA Cup was done, I was like, I've got another year. What I'm going to do is I'm going to go get it all sorted out, get my treatment done in the summer, and then be back raring to go for him in the next season.
Yeah, because the team wasn't, I mean, the championship season had basically fizzled away massively.
Yeah.
Did you basically say in those last few weeks you'll put him to one side and just go and
I bet, yeah. I think it was the time where I wasn't even getting on the bench at that point.
Kikugo as well.
Yeah. So then we had Kwezi Appiah as well, who came in from Palace. He played the last game, Derby.
Yeah.
The Yak obviously played a few games. I would find out, like I always said to Steve, I always said to every manager that if you're ever going to leave me out, say it to me honestly. Pull me in before, just give me an honest opinion, whatever way you're going to go, and I'll take on the chin. I might not like it, but I'll back you any way you say. And Steve was always like, yeah, that's fine, but never did it. And there was a couple of games towards the end of that season, or before the FA Cup semi-final, and I was in the matchday squad, and then would find out that I wasn't in the team or on the bench an hour and a half before the game. So when he named his 18, and I always found that to be a bit disrespectful. I always found that to be a little bit of a cop out, really, like that you didn't want to have that hard conversation. And I remember one game, I can't remember who it was against, but as soon as he finished his team talk, I left and I went home.
Yeah.
I said, I'm not having that, because for me, I've told you what I kind of wanted and expected. Yeah. You agreed with me and you're not doing it. So, and then that was then, and then obviously he was on the bench for the FA Cup game, came on in that game, and then I was like, look, get my injury sorted, and then I can put that, but like this last 6 months or so behind me, and then we can start again in pre-season.
Were you the only player that was kind of feeling like that? Were there other players? Because in the dressing room, was there a sense?
Well,
that
I think a lot of people realised it was happening to me a lot more than it was happening to anybody else.
Oh, okay.
And
what was the response that you got there?
Well, the thing is that whenever that happens, everybody then turns around to each other and goes, oh, who's not made the bench? And then you say X, Y, or Z, or whoever it was. And then most lads turn around and say, you know, you've got to keep your head, don't worry about it, you know, that sort of thing. And then you get some who will say, that's out of order.
Yeah.
And I'm sat there, you know, and you've just found out that you're not in the matchday squad, and you've got your family coming to the games like I would do normally. And then and you're going, nah, I'm not having this. Like, he's not talking to me. I'm not, like, no one's talking to me. Why can't you just have a man-to-man conversation?
Yeah.
Because ultimately, we're here for the same goal, getting the team 3 points. So if you want a harmonious dressing room, keep everybody happy. I know that's not always going to be the available to him, but I always thought that if you treated people with their respect, they give you that back.
It's interesting as a fan to hear that, because I remember Steve Clarke, he sells himself as the honest, straightforward talking type. So if it feels like that wasn't necessarily...
I can only go off from my experience. Yeah. I don't know whether he's... but I always looked at him as, especially when he came in at West Brom, I always thought that from being a number two, and number twos predominantly are the people that if you're not in the team where you've got a question to ask, you don't want to ask the manager, you normally ask them.
Yeah.
So they've got a good rapport with the players. So I always looked at number two, especially where he'd been number two, Chelsea, Liverpool, big players. You know, imagine, I don't know, somebody at Chelsea who wasn't playing every week would turn around to Steve Clarke and said, why is he not playing me? And Steve just turns around and goes, I don't know. Like, you need a little bit more than that. But I always look at that and think, surely you have to be able to give an answer. And like I said before, I don't have to agree with it, but we will move forward together. That's the ultimate game.
Yeah. So what happened over that summer then? Was it a summer of recuperation and recovery?
Yeah. So I had the injections that I needed over the summer. And then I was in with Luke Anthony, the physio, basically doing a program, making sure that I was available for when the boys came back for pre-season. Like, I had a couple of weeks off. Most of the days I was in, either going down to the local gym for the pool or in at the training ground having rehab stuff, strengthening, bit of conditioning stuff. And then whatever day it was, the last day of June or the 1st of July, and then we were all back in.
So was it predominantly with the physio then, or were there any other players who were in then as well?
You normally get, obviously, if you get local lads, they normally come in and use the facilities at the training ground, like the strengthening stuff or the treadmills and stuff or the bikes, if they haven't got their own gyms that they go to. But it's normally physios and a couple of, like, if there's any other injured players, they're normally in. But it can be a lonely place, the training ground, when there's no one in there.
No, I bet. And, it got certainly less lonely over the next few weeks as Reading made quite a substantial investment in new attackers.
Yeah.
And we're talking, I mean, kind of well-known names, Vidra, Piazzon, Ola John, Orlando Saar, and also Paolo Hurtado, the Peruvian winger. What were your kind of thoughts as these players were coming in?
Well, I knew Matty Vidra. Obviously played against him numerous of times when he was at Watford. Really liked him, thought he was a very good player.
Sort of player that you thought you could strike up a partnership with?
Thought that he was a player that was very similar to me. So I thought, well, there's a bit of competition there, so that's fine.
Yeah.
Like I say, loved him as a player, thought he was a great, like, nice guy as well. Loved what he was about as a player, really sharp around the box. Orlando Saar, didn't really know too much about. He came in, did a little bit of, I think he was injured when we signed him. He came in, did a little bit of rehab with me. And I thought, okay, yeah, don't really know too much about you. Not sure how you're going to fare in the hustle and the bustle of the championship with these horrible defenders that you play against every week. Not sure how he's going to be like getting kicked and punched and poked and stuff. Had a bit of a short temper as well, so I thought, oh no, he could be a bit of a liability for us.
Yeah. I think he did get sent off at one point, didn't he?
Yeah. Lucas, I'd obviously known from sort of Chelsea days, I knew, so that I sort of got that relationship with Steve Clarke, the Chelsea sort of thing. And who was the other one?
Ola John and Paolo Hurtado were the
Paolo's didn't last too long. He came in and then left again, didn't he?
He played about 45 minutes, didn't he?
Yeah.
What was kind of going on there?
Well, I don't think he really liked or didn't really enjoy not speaking the language.
Yeah.
I think he was in a lot of homesickness. I don't think his wife settled very well, so I think that was
kind of done and dusted before it began, really.
And Ola was Ola's got bundles of ability, Didn't show it too often, probably is more of a European style player than he is an English championship style player.
Yeah.
But, you know, these are the type of players, if a substantial investment comes in, foreign players normally come through the door. And as you see with Paolo, some of them don't work. But then you see with others, some do work.
Yeah, and Reading, you know, the start of that season, putting the first game, I suppose, aside, which, actually, that is something I do want to ask you about, is that Birmingham game, the first one of the season. If you remember, we went 2-0 down, Nick Blackman scored, then we had a penalty in the last second, I think it was. And you followed him for the rebound, didn't you? And were you about 2 yards wide and you missed? I can't remember if that. I swear that might have been you. And it was a penalty rebound. Is it Orlando Saar who took it? And then it went to about the near post.
I don't remember missing. I never remember missing.
Because that game, we absolutely killed them, and then we somehow didn't manage to.
We would have been in the lilac, wouldn't we?
Yeah, in that purple. I just remember we missed the penalty in the last second, and then the rebound.
I couldn't tell you if I was even on the pitch at that time.
I think you came off the bench.
Did I?
Yeah.
Well, then it may well have been me.
Well, I think that's probably a good idea to repress that memory.
Yeah.
Maybe go and check the highlights.
Well, I'm not sure if I want to. Yeah. I don't know.
But that team, that result aside, went out and actually started the season really well.
Yeah.
So why were we suddenly so good, basically?
Well, I think Steve then put across what he wanted in the whole of pre-season. Obviously, brought in Paul McShane, brought in Stephen Quinn.
Yeah.
You know, players who played in the Premier League, played in the Championship. But men, people who knew how to play in that league and get out of that league, along with obviously the foreign boys as well. You hope a bit of flair in there.
Yeah.
And that was what Steve had done. He'd obviously taken the club had obviously gone away to Thailand for pre-season, which I've said before, I stayed back to continue rehab. But it was predominantly a very good, tough pre-season. Like I say, he got his philosophy across. He got the style of play he wanted, and everybody sort of knew exactly what was what. So it didn't surprise me that with a clear vision of how we were going to play, it didn't surprise me that we started quite well.
Yeah. But yourself, you didn't play so often in that first few weeks. Was that again the situation of not being told what was going on?
I think obviously with the inclusion of four or five players, plus the form of, obviously Nick then went and played up front, didn't he?
Yeah. Yeah, or had a really good spell of form.
Started like a house on fire.
Yeah.
And done really well. A couple of goals at Brentford, or a goal at Brentford. Remember the free kick. You know, played at Everton played at home against Everton in the Cup, yeah. Scored in that, you know, like a house on fire he started. And then I think it was at that time where, again, a similar thing. Not being told, not being communicated with, and then I think that was it then for me.
Did you feel like when it kind of happened again that you kind of had enough of being under?
Well, the Everton game was the final straw for me, because ultimately in sort of cup games, early cup competitions, you normally obviously win the first round, you get a decent team in the third round. And we got Everton, and it was at the time where most of the starting 11 had played most of the games.
Yeah.
So there was a chance to get, I think we had a few injuries as well at that stage, because I don't think Orlando was playing, or Matty wasn't playing. So it was a chance for me to get some time in that game. And by all accounts, I was gonna be playing. And then all of a sudden, I wasn't even in the starting 11, I was on the bench. But then I'm looking at it, and I think we were either 0-0, and it was, you know, half an hour to go or something like that. And they're the sort of times where, as a sub, you sort of think, yeah,
this is my chance.
Now I'm starting to get warm a little bit more, you know. You'll have a chance of coming on if that's, you know, 25 minutes, 20 minutes, all the way down. Then it sort of gets to sort of 15 minutes, and you're thinking, come on. And even though I think we were 1-0 up at the time, we got beat 2-1, I think. Didn't we?
Yeah, yeah.
Ross Barkley, I think, scored a great goal. And I'm thinking, okay, even at 2-1, I'm thinking, come on in.
Yeah.
Like, just give me a little nod, and you think, yeah. Then obviously the game fizzles out and we obviously get beat, and then that was me then, I think. In my mind, I'd just gone.
That's
then.
Kind of the ultimate scenario where if you're going to play me then, you're going to play me. That's when it's going to happen.
So again, and it was without any communication whatsoever. And then it was, I think my time was pretty much done.
So when it came to going on loan to Bristol, was that something that you saw? Was it something that was put upon you sort of thing?
It was something that was, I think Steve actually came and spoke to me, and he said, Bristol City want to take you on loan. And I was like, fine, you know, if I'm going to go somewhere and play, that'd be great.
Championship.
Yeah, it's another Championship club. I know they've just been promoted, but a team that I thought, yeah, well, why not? You know, it's not a million miles away as well.
Yeah.
So, yeah, like I needed to go and play, so I went. And it kind of didn't work out the way I wanted it to. But in a second sense, it actually worked out quite well.
Yeah.
So I went, obviously expecting to play. Steve Cottrell at the time was the manager, and he didn't play me that often, or didn't play me at all. I think my whole time there, I spent every game on the bench, and then it was probably I played an accumulative time of about 62 minutes. So I didn't play that often, yeah. But what I saw was a group of players, predominantly English or British players, who had been taken from League One all the way up to the Championship and had the best team spirit I've ever seen at a football club, in any club that I've been at, whose fighting spirit and everything was there to be seen. Brought in a few people, but they had to be the right people to play in that team. So that was a good experience for me, but ultimately one that I didn't play that often either.
Yeah.
So from that sense, it was not a great one.
Well, while you were away, it's interesting you say about sort of team spirit and everything, because as someone who was kind of on the fringes of the 05-06 team, which kind of survived mainly off a team spirit rather than any, you know, individual world-class players. And then back at Reading, there was a team that was full of individual talent, players that had played in the Premier League and had come down. And there is a sort of sense sometimes that when players have to drop down a level to push back up, they kind of lose that extra edge in a way.
Yeah, I mean, if you were in my second spell with the sort of the new people that came in with the new investment and the more foreign people, or not necessarily foreign people, but people who don't know about Reading as a football club.
Yeah.
It's very hard to get across to them what Reading Football Club is all about.
Yeah.
And if they don't know any of the history, and they don't know that, you know, Reading won the league and, you know, got to eighth in the Premier League, like, they don't know any of this, and they don't know that Reading's predominantly like a working man's club. It's people that work hard, you know, work long hours to give people a good chance. If they don't know any of that, they come in, they just see a ball and they kick it, and then it's, you know, and then they go home and they come back the next day and do exactly the same. So it's very hard to get that team spirit if you don't know anything.
And what would you say then is the reason that while you were at Reading kind of just fell off a cliff, basically, in terms of their form? Because there was that game, I think it was Fulham away, Reading were 2-0 up, absolutely cruising, and then conceded 4 goals, lost 4-2, and I think from then on everything just wasn't the same again.
Was that was the same sort of time where Steve had sort of spoken to Fulham, or didn't go.
Was that as well,
They had that, didn't they? So I think that if you talk to a football club and don't go, there's always some sort of, there's something in the background that makes you think as a player that, well, why is he back here? Why did he not take that job?
Yeah.
Like, because obviously he wanted to take that job. So I think as players, you sort of thought, well, if you were going to jump ship, now you're back. So why have we got to play for you anymore?
Like,
not that any of them were saying this, but, you know, kind of like
in the back of your mind, and loses 1%.
That's it.
That's
so, and then ultimately, form dropped off, and Steve ended up losing his job, and Brian came back in.
Yeah, and was Brian McDermott someone you were very familiar with from your early days at the club?
Yeah, so I had Brian as reserve team manager in my first spell.
And that reserve team won the league as well, didn't
it? Yeah, chief scout. He was obviously, you know, Brian's pretty much done every role in that football club, so he knows the football club inside out. He obviously been a manager, won the league as well, got Reading promoted into the Premier League, so he knows exactly what it is or what it takes to get Reading out of that league. It was a different feel this time around when he took over though.
Yeah, so what, again, the results didn't kind of come, so what would you put that down to?
Probably the players that he had available to him, against, you know, with the investment that we had, they're not Brian's type of people.
Yeah.
You know, Brian likes the hard working the player. You know, he was the one who was the thought process behind signing Shane and Kevin Doyle, and you know, these are the kind of people that he likes, ones who work all day and all night for you.
Yeah.
So potentially someone like Ola John, who doesn't, who's not gonna, you know, you're probably not gonna take him in the trenches with you. Probably not going to be Brian's type of player, but if any of the people upstairs are saying you've got to play Ola, then it's,
yeah,
you know, it's catch 22. Would you go against your principals and say, no, this is my team, I do it, or you own the football club, so you get to do what you want?
Well, that's kind of how it ended up in the end, wasn't it? It's a case of McDermott. I remember in the stands, it was a feeling that when Brian left, I felt personally like he was very hard dealt with, because it wasn't his team. He wasn't given a summer to make it his team.
No.
And a lot of the fans kind of turned on him because he hadn't reproduced the championship winning season he had before.
Yeah. But again, though, if you look at the championship winning season, Jason Roberts, a focal point in attack, Lafondra, like a predator in the box, you know, Jem and you know, Howe and people like this, all these players who will run all day for you and get you where you need to be. And it probably would have cost the club an absolute fortune to get rid of the ones they've literally just brought in a season before, to then go out and find other players. And I don't know, but I would imagine that Brian McDermott probably isn't a manager that foreign owners would be like expecting to create magical things.
Yeah.
Like he's probably not, like I would say, like a sexy manager.
Yeah.
Like, he's not very flary, and he's just straight. He knows exactly what he wants. He knows exactly where he wants to go, and he knows how to get there. But if you've got foreign investors who want flair and all this, Brian's probably not the guy, regardless of his track record.
Did you come across this, because it was the Ties who owned the club at that point, did you come across them much? Did you really have, as a player, much involvement with them?
You know, they would float about the training ground. They would obviously come in to the dressing room sometimes, and especially on the FA Cup run, they were always there because it was really good promotion for the football club, which they could then sell in Thailand and all that sort of stuff. So, but obviously when things weren't going so well, didn't really see too many.
Yeah.
Of them.
Were you kind of glad to get out then when you did?
Well, the thing was, Brian, obviously my loan ended at Bristol, and Brian brought me back in, and I played the rest of that season.
Yeah.
And I was there, and I was like, if Brian's going to be the manager, I'll have a chance, because Brian knows me probably better than most people at that football club. So I thought, I'll have a go here. Came back, played. We still had a decent FA Cup run. I think we got to the quarters.
Yeah, actually. Yeah. It was against Crystal Palace.
Yeah. Played in that. But then Brian was, he got to the last, I think, two or three games, and Brian came up to me and he was like, look, there's going to be nothing for you in the summer here. I don't even think there's anything for me in the summer here.
Yeah, I was going to say.
If there was something for me, then yeah, we would do something for you. But I don't know that
he
I'm going to be here. So, and I appreciated that honesty, because if he turned around to me and said, oh no, there's something for you here, and then all of a sudden he gets a sack and then somebody else comes in, you're probably out the door anyway. So so I appreciated that honesty, but you know, when you look back at it, maybe it was a time to leave.
Yeah, and as you did leave, what did you kind of felt needed to be changed looking as at the club, as you know, someone who, you know, just left it?
Obviously, I never wanted to leave. I sort of felt like if I could spend the next sort of 5, 6, 7 years there, I'd retire there, and then I'd go into a coaching role there, and then sort of go and grow with the football club no matter what way it was going. Having somebody who'd been at the football club for good times and bad, you get a feel of what's happening at the football club. But I don't know, for me it was probably the right time to leave. And whatever direction the football club went in after I left, I mean, it's not got a whole lot better.
No, well, we kind of had the much-touted Dutch Revolution after you left with Jaap Stam and Bijan Tevreden, and there were some very unknown players being signed from abroad, which ultimately, as you say, we got to the playoff final, but it didn't...
Which was a good season, because...
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, if you look at... go back and you look at in the past of the people that have tried to pass their way out of the back, and at Reading you look at Nigel, who didn't work with Brendan, who didn't work with, and then Jaap Stam's come in and basically said, well, yeah, we can do it, and they did it, and obviously, you know, missed out in the playoffs, and but it was then from the playoffs you had to then progress for that.
Yeah,
and there was a lot of people out of contract. There was a lot of people that moved on and didn't rebuild from there.
Yeah, well, before we go on, I kind of want to rewind quite a considerable amount and talk about your early stage. But before we do that, what is kind of your sense with the club as it is now, with under Mark Bowen, and you know, you're saying you're watching a Leeds game recently. What sort of stuff do you think that Reading have going for at the moment?
Well, I think they look a bit more of a solid unit, especially in the Leeds game they did. Obviously Mark Bowen's come in, had sort of a mixture of results, but it's very early stages for him.
Another number two who's turned into, we seem to have a lot of those, like famous number twos, Paul Clement as well.
Well, he was another one who tried passing, didn't he? So, but I mean, I think for me at the minute, Reading is a football club that just needs to get back to basics, back to being a solid foundation, starting from the goalkeeper back five on Tuesday night. But had, obviously, I know Chris Gunter came back in because there was an injury, but having him and Gareth McCleary, people that have been at the football club for a while, they can hopefully sort of drag a few with them in the direction of that. But yeah, I mean, they look a more solid unit under Bowen than what they did under Gomez.
Yeah, and you were saying about sort of getting back to basics, a lot of that with Reading is the academy, and as someone who came through the academy, probably not really in a time when it had its sort of prestigious name that it has now, but when you think about the sort of academy players you've watched at the club while you've been there, it's, you know, it's Jack Stacey, Tish Boller was a very good talent, Jordan Abito, Alex McCarthy, Michael Hector. Who would you say are the kind of top talents that you've witnessed coming through?
It's a tough one, really, because obviously when I play with most of them, they were all young.
Yeah.
So it'd be very hard to say that he was the standout or this one or that one when they were, you know, 17, 18. Obviously, Michael Hector went to Chelsea, but whether that was the right club to go to or not, I don't know.
Yeah.
Aaron Tischbowler went to Villa, but that was a Steve Clark move.
Yeah,
he went there with Di Matteo, then they brought him in, and then he hasn't really done anything since then. Jordan's obviously a very, very capable left back, and actually grown as a person since taking on the role of somebody who's been at the football club for a long time.
Yeah.
So that's good. But I mean, there's not really, obviously, I played with Jeb and Howe. Howe's obviously gone on to do great things, you know, scored the goal for Wales in the Euros, was it?
Yeah,
it was. And then obviously now he's at West Brom, so that was a, you know, it's a good club for him, that. I mean, there's not really one standout player, but it's the academy's produced a hell of a amount of players.
And what, I mean, as academy sort of go now, and as you can see at Southend at the moment, how have academy sort of changed over the years? How were you kind of looked after as a youngster?
At Reading, we were given everything, but they always told that you don't get everything if you don't work hard.
Yeah.
and we, you know, we all had jobs. You know, some of us, my first job when I turned a scholar was I had to make tea for the staff in the morning. It was like, this was Steve Coppell, Wally Downs, Nick Hammond, Kevin Dillon.
I would not fancy getting Wally Downs tea order wrong.
Brian was in there. You took five, six fitness coach, John Goodman, six, seven people. You know, two or three cups of tea in the morning. And this is like, you're talking from like, you're in at nine till they start training like half 10. So you're going from nine till half 10.
That's the tea boy.
Pretty much, you know, in and out of the thing. But it was, for me, like, it was that, I had that. I had, you know, two players, two or three pairs of boots each that we had to do. You know, it was good grounding. It was very good. And that's not the case now. Academies don't let the, or don't, are not allowed to give the players jobs for whatever reason that is. It's sort of seen as a little bit of formal bullying, but I think it's very good grounding. But you know, that is what the stipulations are at the minute, so that's fine. But at Reading, it was a very, very good academy, and that you know, started up with Brendan and then carried on with Eamon.
Yeah, well, who did you kind of look up to, and who helped you out, I suppose, out of, you know, the first team squad at that time? Who were the sort of players that...
Well, we had, obviously, what you wanted somebody from the academy to be in the first team, or in the first team squad, and there was always, you know, you have your first year pro, sorry, your first year scholar, your second year scholar, and either you go to a third year scholar or you go into first year pro.
Yeah.
And if you're first year pro, you sort of normally train with the first team. So if you're a first year scholar, you always look up to them.
Yeah.
And in that sort of era, who did they have at the time? Like Johnny Mullins was one, who obviously went on to have an okay career. Not many, to be fair, but then obviously people like, do you remember Peter Castle?
Yeah.
Remember, so he sort
still
of
still the youngest player to have played for Reading, isn't he?
Is he?
Yeah, played like 16 years and a month or something. Really, really young.
So he was one that you always looked at and thought, I want to get there.
Yeah, yeah.
I need to get there.
Yeah.
And one of the only ways you got there was by, you know, not say doing your jobs, but working hard and producing it for the academy and having the backing of Brendan at the time or Eamon, and it was like a sort of an era in the academy where things started to work, and that was sort of just around the Eamon sort of era, really, where he was basically saying to everyone, look, we believe in you. The manager believes in you, but he needs to see what you're capable of, and it started to work.
Yeah, and it's interesting with Eamon Dolan and it working and everything. What if you had to sort of say his sort of personality, as it were? What would you say are the kind of reasons why he was so revered? What did he do as a person?
He was just a. He was an amazing guy. He was just very, very infectious. Like, I mean, some of the things he used to say were mad. But and when you look back at him, if I see Jem or Simon Church or anything, you talk about Eamon and you say, oh, do you remember when he used to do this? And it just brings a smile to your face because it was, some of it was just. I mean, he would say, like, if I was. He used to say, if I walk up to you in the street, I'd do a double move. And a double move he meant by go left and go right.
Yeah,
so if
yeah.
you go up to somebody on the pitch, you've got a chance of going left, go right.
Yeah.
But you're practicing it out on the street. And you're looking at it going, I'm never ever walking down the street going left and right.
That's it.
You know what I mean? So you're never ever going to do it. But you sort of got the sort of type of person that he was. He wanted you to be a professional from the moment you wake up to the moment you went to sleep, and you know that doesn't matter whether you're walking along the street or whether you're out on the training pitch. So he was just ultimately infectious in every way possible.
Yeah, kind of eat, sleep and breathe football sort of guy.
Yeah.
And how was Steve Coppell as a young player? Because I think when I've spoken to players on that, they've always said that he was a bit kind of, didn't speak too often, but when he spoke, you kind of listened to it and everything. But with young players, I get the sense you might need a bit more feedback and stuff like that. So how was he to work with?
Well, Steve Coppell, like as a young person coming through, as a first year scholar, he had that scare factor.
Really?
Yeah, like I was always like, I didn't want to bother him, like because he had the first thing to deal with.
Yeah.
And if you asked him a question, it was like, why are you asking me? You've got X, Y, and Z to talk to. It was only when you sort of move up a little bit, you get to your second year scholar, your third year pro, or your first year pro, is when you sort of feel a little bit more comfortable talking to him.
Yeah.
Plus, I was getting him tea every morning, so I was expecting him to talk to me. But he was great, and I've listened to sort of podcasts that he's done previously, and he was genuinely like a really, really nice guy. But as somebody who never really played under him, never really got to experience the man in the dugout, I got to deal with the man at the training ground.
Yeah.
And that was, for me, sometimes a little bit more scarier because he had that sort of weird,
that
scary...
Yeah. Him.
So that was where, when I said to you earlier about talking to your number two, Kevin Dillon,
yeah.
I would talk to Kevin Dillon all the time and say, oh, how do I get a chance to be in the first team? And he would always give me more advice. Because you can't then go to the manager and go, how do I get in your team?
Yeah.
And the only thing he'd probably say is by doing whatever
you
need to do.
He's probably going to say exactly what you think he's going to say and not actually won't learn anything.
Exactly. So you talk to the second in command, which is where I said to you earlier about Steve Clark being a number two, you'd expect that bit of honesty from him.
Yeah.
But he was great, Steve. I got a lot of time for him. I've seen him numerous times since I left. And he's always got time to talk and he was the manager that got Reading the ultimate prize at the end of it.
Yeah, well, I suppose with that team, when they got to eighth and obviously a bit new out on loan at the time they were in the Premier League, were you kind of even a little bit surprised that it went that far?
Well, I mean, if you look at it now, not at Reading, but anyone, if you get momentum and you get promotion, the next season normally carries on.
Yeah.
If you can try and keep the core of that team together and add maybe one or two, maybe three players, and then they all of a sudden they buy into the sort of camaraderie and whatever the club are doing at the time, and then they, you know, you can kind of carry that on, the momentum side. That was it. Reading at that time just had ultimate belief in what they were doing.
Yeah.
And then when they moved into the Premier League, it continued. None of them, I don't think, unless Sol Ki-hyun had played in the Premier League, I'm not sure, but none of them had played in the Premier League. So they were basically walking into something that they didn't know. And what was there to be scared of? The fact that, you know, they would lose, but no one expected them to win. But then all of a sudden you start winning and it carries on again.
Yeah,
and you get to eight, and then that's where the problems start to come in.
Well, I think it's very interesting that of that team, obviously, how many, like eight or nine in the end, got big money moves elsewhere. And how many would you say succeeded in those clubs? Maybe one or two, in terms of Kevin Doyle, Mika Shorey, other than that.
The thing is, though, what do you deem being successful? Like, does City going to Chelsea say success?
Well, that's
Didn't play that often. Kits going to Stoke didn't really work out that well for him.
Yeah.
Shorey went to Villa. Doyle went to Wolves. I mean, there was a few. Do you know what I mean? There was a good few left. But did any of them really? I mean, Doyle had a really good career in the Premier League. Obviously, scored loads of goals and stuff. Kits did okay, but none of them cemented their way. I mean, City went Chelsea, Stoke, Villa, Fulham.
Yeah.
They spent a lot of time in there. It was only really sort of towards, not towards the end, but after he left Chelsea is when he started to be a Premier League player.
Yeah, that's the thing, is I suppose, because for you as well, when it came about, obviously, you know, winning the league and everything in 05-06, I think I remember hearing you say before that winner's medal isn't really a winner's medal that you have as, like, something that you fully earned, as it were.
Yeah.
So what's the sort of, how do you kind of feel about that, you know, looking back on it now, good, was it now? We were just talking before, actually, it's about, I think it's 14 or 15 years
yeah.
to the day since your debut, because that was the Plymouth game, but just this week kind of thing. So how do you look back on your place in that achievement?
I'll never change it for anything, because I was part of something that, you know, I'm not going to say will never be achieved again, but
yeah.
It's going to be a while before anybody achieves under 6 points. But I think sometimes I always looked at it as I was the guy in the background, never the guy in the
headlines.
in the front of it. And playing the part that I played, you know, 2 or 3 league games, 2 or 3 cup games, they mean the world to me, of course they do, and I was part of something, like I say, that I'll never ever change. But do I feel like I deserve the medal? Probably not. Am I grateful to have one? Absolutely.
Yeah.
Is my name in that record book? Yes, it should be. Whether it is or not, I don't know. but it's... I think sometimes you feel like that I don't deserve it.
Yeah.
Like, if you ask people, you know, who were the strikers in that season, I wouldn't be one that anybody would say was part of it. You would always say the four that were there. But I would always put me in there because I was there.
Is it a case maybe of if you'd have scored a goal, or if you'd have just got one more thing, then that might have...
Maybe if I'd have started a game,
I might have
felt like I'd earned it. Maybe if, because I think the Stoke game that I played in, I think we won. The Plymouth game I came on in, we won. So obviously I was a part of 6 points.
Yeah.
You know, so that was good. But had I potentially started one of those games or scored a goal in one of those games, I feel like I would have contributed a little bit more to them, maybe, you know, 5-10 minutes or whatever they were, substitute appearances.
Yeah, well, we got the record kind of by a point, so who knows, maybe if you'd have done something slightly different, we might not have ended up with it, so there is always that. But one thing you did play a part in was when we went on tour to the Peace Cup in Korea. And I've heard some very interesting things about that tour and it not being necessarily the best way to prepare for a season, basically. What are your kind of memories of that?
I really enjoyed it because I don't even think I was meant to go. I think like this was like my first tour away, or second tour away. I think we went to Sweden once, and because we signed Seoul, he was the big thing in Korea at the time. So he was, I think he basically got us this tour. And there's me at the age of 18, 17, flying over business class, thinking, God, this is like unbelievable.
Get used to this.
That's it, absolutely. You know, slippers on the plane, TV screens and whatever, and you're thinking, yeah, it's not like the old EasyJet economy, do you know what I mean? But you're going over there and you get picked up at the airport, you get your little, you know, flowers and everything that you, when you get there, and police escort to the hotel, and you're taking over this floor, and you're thinking, Jesus Christ, like, this is some hell of a trip. And then it was into the games and training and everything else, and it was like no other, really. But it was, you couldn't go anywhere without a security detail,
yeah,
like, which was you know, you walk around like the president. Literally, you like you had two or three guys, big, massive guys, all with like dark suits on, and you're going into the shops and whatever, and people are looking at you going, "Who the hell are you?" And you're like, "No one, mate." Just, but that was the way it was, and I'm guessing that was it was. You know, the hospitality was unbelievable. Travel was great. The games were amazing. You know, just playing in the stadiums were.
Was it against Lyon? You scored a winner.
I mean, if you look back at that Lyon team as well, I mean, they had some serious players. That was at a time where Lyon were very good as well.
Yeah, got to the Champions League
semi-final. That's it. So to play in that, I mean, I remember playing right wing. And cutting in and scoring, it was, you know, it was an unbelievable time for me. And it was at a time where I thought things could change. On the back of that, I might get a chance.
Yeah.
But maybe when we got back, it probably didn't work out that way for whatever reason. And you know, Reading were playing in the Premier League and I wasn't.
Well, when you got sent out to Swindon and did, you know, very well at Swindon, how do you think that Reading, why did they kind of let you go? Did you think it was a case of classic get first team experience?
Yeah, or? I mean, obviously I'd gone out to Brentford and Northampton in the season before. And I went out to Brentford as a midfield player. Didn't really work out that way because Brentford and Reading had a really good relationship. Obviously, Wally Downs and Steve were obviously part of their staff before. And then I went to Northampton as a striker and then ended up scoring a couple of goals. I scored three goals in six or seven games. So, and that was the end of the season. And that was where I got my belief from that actually, yeah, I can do this. Because, you know, going to Brentford and not scoring, and you know, ultimately that ended up with Brentford getting relegated to League Two, I think it was. In the back of my mind, I was like, "Oh, not sure this is, you know, what I want to be." And then all of a sudden, you start scoring a couple of goals, and you think, "Yeah, actually, I can do this." So that gave me good belief going into the next year. Which then, like you said, I went to Swindon and actually. Things just clicked for one reason or another. I had a choice between going to Swindon or going to Yeovil, and Yeovil was miles away.
Yeah.
So Swindon was down the road from obviously where I lived in Tyler, so it was a good fit for me. I could live at home, I could travel in.
Yeah.
And I really enjoyed my time.
And you moved there permanently, and it seemed like there was one of a number of players that Reading have let go when quite young on loan. I think you could probably put Nathan Tyson, maybe even Mikel Antonio into that sort of list of players that probably got let go a little bit too early without getting a chance. Did you feel like that kind of motivated you in a way, the fact that Reading were willing to sell you? Or?
Well, I think if you look at Kitson, Leita, Long, Doyle, all playing or all going to play some part anyway, where was I going to get a chance? Even in the cup games I was on the bench. So I think for me it was after going out on loan the previous season, thinking I don't want to come back and sit and do nothing, so I needed to go and play. If I was going to have a career, I need to go and play and score goals. And then, you know, if I didn't then come back after that, then fine. But it was more go out and basically prove, one, to Reading, and two, prove to myself that I can actually do this. And it was, you know, it worked out quite well.
Yeah, well, definitely. You know, we're in a position now where we can kind of look back over the two spells. And looking back at the sort of players that you played with, obviously, like, you can pick the most talented quite easily, but who were the kind of most interesting characters that you played with?
At Reading?
Yeah, well, I'm kind of thinking of Paul Grebniak was a bit of a character. Yakuba as well was this, you know, very interesting sign that we managed to pull off.
Well, Jamie Mackey, hands down, will be the ultimate joker that I've ever played with. Like, even though his spell was quite short, but he You know, he came in and he could... He might not know anybody in a room, but he could basically have everyone in stitches.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, he's one of those kind of guys. Obviously, Jem has done, had an unbelievable career, done really well at Reading. So that's great for him. I just really enjoyed. I mean, there was never really anyone go the other way. There was never really anyone I didn't like.
Yeah.
Or didn't enjoy playing with at Reading for any reason. I always like to think that I came in at a time where the likes of Jake Taylor was young, Ryan Edwards was young, Aaron Cole was young. Jordan was young. We had all of these, and they sort of seen me come in and it might have helped them a little bit. But I always like to think that, especially in the second spell when I came in, there was no one there that I thought, oh no, I don't want to play with you or any of that. But then obviously when you start bringing in the likes of Orlando Saar and Matty Vidra and then things start to feel like you're not being treated well or you're not going to be part of it, that's when I think it starts to become a little bit more sour, not towards the players, but towards the football club.
Yeah.
So then my love for the football club sort of diminished a little bit because of the way I was being treated.
Yeah.
Not from any player's fault at all.
Yeah, well, I suppose we'll round off. Thank you very much for coming and having a good chat with us. And I just want to talk about to round it off is just where you see yourself in the future now. Because, I mean, you spoke to us on the website a couple of weeks ago and said in coaching and that sort of thing is what you want to get into. Is that really where you're sort of setting yourself up?
Yeah, I mean, for me, I'm doing my A licence at the minute, so hopefully finish that off in the summer and then play for potentially another sort of two or so years. And then I'd like to find myself in a coaching role wherever that would be. But you know, if I was able to get an opportunity to come to Reading and get a coaching role somewhere in the academy or in the under 23s or whatever that is, then I feel like I could add a lot of value to that position.
Yeah.
Obviously, I've just seen Reading have got rid of he left the academy manager.
Yeah,
just left.
Yeah, Roddy Rich. To be honest, we know very little about what's actually happened with that, but
right.
we do seem to know he's left. So it's weird. There seems to be a lot of sort of turnover behind the scenes these days. So
yeah
there is always.
I suppose that's a kind of a good thing for me if they turn over a lot of people, but. Obviously, that doesn't mean that you have a long time at the football club.
Yeah, exactly.
I think for me, ultimately, it's continue playing for the next couple of years. But I would love to find myself somewhere along the line at Reading as a coach, whether that be the manager or assistant manager or in the academy, because I've been there, I've seen it, I've done it. I know. Top to bottom, that football club.
Yeah.
So it would be something that would interest me very much.
Absolutely. Well, thank you very much for coming and having a chat with us. Hopefully, those listening haven't been too crowded over by the various people having a nice drink around us. But thank you very much, Simon Cox, and best of luck for the rest of the season at Southend. And who knows, hopefully, we'll be seeing you at the club again in not too long time.
Cheers. Thanks very much.
You're listening to the Tilehurst End Podcast by Reading fans for Reading fans.